to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. No Ben or Marcel, both are on holiday. So we've got Mark Telling back.
The best of the rest.
I'm glad you said it. Welcome back, Mark.
Thank you.
How are you, mate? You been all right?
I'm good, yeah. I've been holidaying in New Zealand all summer. Slash working. So the World Cup has crept back up upon me.
Yeah, it's been a good summer, hasn't it? What do you think? How's your summer been? How are the kids' trainings getting on?
Summer was good. We were super lucky to have a huge dump of snowfall in New Zealand pretty much the day we arrived. So that was completely by chance or amazing planning. And
you tell the parents it was amazing planning.
Exactly. I knew it was going to snow around the 1st of August. So that was what our summer looked like, training-wise. And before that, we were in Stelvio for a bit. That was looking good in late June, early July. And of course, now it's getting slightly colder again. Snow is starting to come again. But as we know, some of the glaciers are looking a little bit, let's say, grey, brown, green, with splashes of white there. So
the picture's coming out of, well, obviously with Solden now just under 2 weeks away, not this coming weekend as we record, the weekend after. With Solden just around the corner, it's just rock, isn't it? You can't see anything apart from where they've been doing their snow farming. So those of you that don't know snow farming, they basically save a load of snow through the winter, and then through the end of the winter, and they cover it over, which then tends to keep the majority or a large part of it, and then they can spread it back out again, which is what they're furiously doing.
Exactly. So there's a few places in Austria doing that. I believe Hippach as well, Meierhofen, and Pasttern at Resterhur, and of course where quite a lot of the teams go and train at Kabdalis as well.
So because Levy does it as well. Levy's been doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Pushing some
snow. Kabdalis, I know it started to snow this week. And obviously...
So that's northern Sweden.
Northern Sweden. And last year, it was actually... it didn't have much natural snow. And we were sort of using all of the snow farm snow. This year, it looks like there's some natural snow that's come earlier. And the temperatures are already a little bit colder. So it's getting just... I would say just a little bit harder to predict. The general trend of the glaciers is obviously that they're receding and melting. And I think summer training is going to be, especially August, let's say, and sort of early part of October, it's going to be interesting going forward to see who makes what decisions to guarantee top quality training in the future. Of course, there's... Italian one, Valsonalis. I think they've been closed this year or this autumn in order to replace a lift. So that's put a bit of a squeeze, as far as I'm aware, on places like Pitsdal, Saas-Fee. I think Hinterstuks had this, a bit of snow this week. And obviously Zermatt and Saas-Fee higher up than most. And I think they are faring the best.
Yeah, we touched on it on the last pod with Ben and Marcel about, you know, the changing landscape of summer training. It's interesting to see you're taking it as an active coach, you know, not at World Cup level, but at FIS and Europa Cup level with your athletes. So seeing how it's changing for you guys. But we were talking about last week how, you know, maybe some sort of way of limiting the amount of training that goes on through the summer, like Formula One team with their limited testing time, because surely you must see it and trying to find lane space when you're in the likes of Saas-Fee or Zermatt or Pitsdal is obviously priorities given to firstly World Cup teams, but then the home nation of that team, and then whoever they've got a nice little training sort of arrangement, sort of reciprocal, we'll give you an extra couple of lanes if you give us some later on in the season. So how, you know...
It's interesting, isn't it? I think it's becoming, you know, if we look at Formula One, there's obviously official... let's say official training and then qualifying, and that's a fair landscape, and testing is limited so that people can only, you know, invest a certain amount of money and they can only invest in a certain amount of training time, so they try and keep things relatively equal. In skiing, not all men, women are born equal. And there's definitely you know, if you look at down in Ushuaia, it's very much, as far as I'm aware anyway, French and Italian dominated in terms of organizing the training and piece distribution. If you look at the Swiss, then early season, you've got to think, okay, let's keep an eye on the Swiss, because they've got Saspe, they've got Zermatt, and of course, last week, I believe there were some videos up already of some guys training in Diavoletta. So they're,
where's that?
Yeah, they're very well.
Where's Diavoletta?
Diavoletta is near to St Moritz.
Okay.
So they're very, very well placed to perform early on. And it's the other thing that's interesting, and certainly from our point of view, even as in a club level, it's the sort of spring training. You know, April, May this year, 2023, May was really good.
Mm.
It stayed cold a bit longer. So
we had a massive. We had a great big dump. I think I was in Teen at the end of the season, and they had the mega dump around sort of early second week in April, like the best snow dump that they'd had all season long. So then it was, you know, it was like,
yeah, most of the British champs was cancelled on the Fizz week due to, you know, new snow coming and storms coming. And I think, you know, we ran two slaloms in the end, but ultimately we couldn't do the speed, we couldn't do the GS events, and that was because of the amount of snow coming. So it's definitely April and May time, a couple of months there that can be utilised. And then I guess the difference at the World Cup level is you've got the season opener in Solden. So everyone's trying to be prepared already, race ready for October, because even if we take away Solden, you still look at the calendar through November and there's a decent number of events. So everyone's trying to be ready for that period, and that's quite difficult difficult to secure, let's say, guaranteed good training unless you go down to the Southern Hemisphere. So certainly for us, we don't need to be ready by that point in the season. We can go to Southern Hemisphere if we're lucky enough to do so, train, and then have a bit of a bigger gap whilst we wait for the snow to come good on the European glaciers. The World Cup guys and girls, they don't necessarily have that luxury, and therefore I think they're under pressure. Coaches and the sports administrators, performance directors are under some pressure to find top quality training and to guarantee top quality training.
Yeah, especially when we are very climate aware within our sport, because of it's so obvious with the state of the glaciers, and so you don't want to be doing a load of air miles if you can get away with it. But the tech guys, it's a slightly easier program. They can go indoors and spend a lot of time getting that volume that you and I were talking about it today, but getting that volume that you need to be race ready. But if you don't, a downhill or a super G skier, you don't get that luxury. And if you want to be race ready, come Chavinia Zermatt, which is happening supposedly on the 11th and 12th of November, which will be the first time ever that event gets underway. Obviously, the first time was supposed to be last season, but we cancelled that. I think high winds and it's very exposed up there, isn't it? There's not a lot of cover, so the minute it's not necessarily even snow. Issues with snow there, it's just issues with wind, and there's so many extra factors with it starting so high. But you've got to hit the ground running as a speed skier, and if you don't go down to the southern hemisphere, whether that's New Zealand or down to Chile or Argentina, then you're really limited. You're maybe getting a 40-second super G at best and a 30-second downhill, if you're lucky enough to let the Swiss let you have a go on the speed track.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You've got the amount of venues that can offer the right preparation for speed. It's a very small number. New Zealand, Australia. I mean, we were there this year. They didn't run the Australia, New Zealand Cup Super G races. There's very limited opportunities to do speed anyway. Training down there, so you're really limited to South American Cup events. Let's say if people want to use events, speed events to warm up in the summer, and you're limited to Argentina and Chile, and I would also say obviously Zermatt and Saspe as your options for getting any sort of speed training in. Maybe some small sections in Stelvio as well.
Yeah, a little bit of gliding, but maybe, a couple of turns.
But realistically, you'll see most of the big dogs going down to the likes of Ushuaia, Portillo, El Colorado, Coralco now further south in Chile. So that's the changing landscape, and it'll be interesting to see if Zermatt Chavinia get the race off this year. I presume they've put loads of stuff in place to make sure that they can get that off, and then Solden coming up, it looks like they're doing everything they can with the snow farming. Gurgel is quite high. It's new on the calendar for the men. Having an earlier season slalom race again, I think will be interesting, because we were kind of limited the last couple of years to December and January. Yeah. Boom, boom.
Done.
And then that's it. That's
especially with major, champs.
Slalom Tour decided, or as good as decided by that point. So that will be interesting to have another race earlier on. I don't think it will have changed people's prep that much, but it'll be interesting. It'll give us an indicator, won't it?
Well, we did talk about through last season, certainly towards the end of last season, about the calendar obviously comes up when you're looking towards for the next season, but we were sort of hoping or thinking that we might start later, finish later, because the World Cup finals are in Saalbach on the 22nd to the 24th of March.
So I've forgotten about that. That's perfect. That's linked to Leogang, so we'll go and have a look at that.
You guys will get to go and see that in person. get your flags out and get up close and personal with the biggest stars. But that's quite an early finish, relatively. There's plenty. I said just earlier on, there's plenty of snow going on, so it would take the pressure off the likes of Solden, Zermatt, Gurgel. Even Leviat, they're busy pushing around farm snow.
It's a little bit strange almost. We've had to look at this, and I know many of the British ski clubs have looked at the same thing, especially the ones with athletes skiing full time. And you're sort of thinking, well, why aren't we using April and May a little bit more when it's warmer weather, the days are a bit longer, you're still getting a reasonable melt freeze, or you can do the free skiing for the following season. You can do all that technical work in really nice conditions. And why don't we do that and do a little bit less in, say, October, November, when it's grim and windy and dark and really not that enjoyable. So, there needs to be an evolving way of thinking about it. And I think certainly, from my point of view, a few others were starting to think a bit more in that way, to have clearer blocks of physical training, either Southern Hemisphere or some glacier training if it works in the summer, and then another block, and just be a bit more patient in the start of the season, because apart from World Cup, you don't need to be scrapping around like a lunatic for amazing training when if you've had a good summer.
A good end to the winter, or very early sort of spring conditions where you're getting a load of volume, you're doing all those hard yards, just slogging your way, doing runs and runs and runs. Then you take your summer to get yourself really, solid and strong in the gym, help injury prevention, all that sort of stuff, and then gradually build into the season. And speaking as a downhiller, we were relatively late starting compared to the last weekend in October for the tech skiers, or certainly for the giant slalom skiers. I remember training along, on the glaciers alongside the rest of the British team, but across all the certainly the Euro teams with Austria, French, and the likes, and seeing all the GS guys having to act, they are really pushing really hard, really early to get up for one weekend. And at that time, it used to go Solden. That we never had anything the following weekend, which we've got in Zermatt Chavinia. You didn't have Gurgel. Levy is a relatively new addition. So basically, you were then going from the end of October for a World Cup, and then the next World Cup was Lake Louise at the end of November, which was the speed race. So you had this like weird season opener. And Solden, we've spoken about it before, but Solden is the season opener. It's the Austrians getting excited. Most of the lifts start opening. They use it as a kickstarter for promotion of ski venues, as well as lift passes, as well as kit, that they use that as a real sort of exhibition of skiing's here, winter's here, let's get going. And so, but now we sort of filled that gap between
and if we don't fill the gap with the other races, it's kind of right, here's winter, and then because of the temperatures at the moment, it's kind of like, here's winter. Actually, no, it's not. Let's have another break. Right, here's winter. And, for months, people are hashtagging winter is coming. And you think, well, yeah, it's more like middle of spring at the moment, to be honest. And October camps when I was younger competing myself, but not only that, when I was first coaching, you know, you were guaranteed some horrendous days of minus 20, crazy winds, lift stopping and everything else. And certainly last year, 2022, we were setting courses in t-shirts and getting a tan on and everything else. So it's, you know, it's, well, it's got easier, hasn't it, really? It's just got nicer for everyone. The kids have got soft.
That's the problem. but yes, yeah, so it is interesting. I don't know. We touched on it last week about how you get all these venues that are in iconic parts of the season. I think it then becomes, you know, Solden is always that weekend in October. And then it feels very difficult for Fizz to try and move it. It would take
correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it started as a sort of, okay, let's have a race early on to see where we all stand. And then it seems that was perhaps one way of thinking, which makes some sense. Okay, let's do a test event and see, you know, GS, and the sort of most broad of all the disciplines. Let's do GS. Let's do it as a test event, see where we stand, and then let's go away and train again. But actually, it's become sort of test event, but then let's fill in, you know, we fill up November as well. So it's just meant that the season starts and hammers on through. Because if you're, you know, if you're a GS and speed skier, obviously for the slalom guys, it's ever so slightly different. But GS Super G downhill skier, you've got Solden into Zermatt Trevinia and then into across to Canada by the end of November.
Well, now across to America without the likes of the old Lake Louise, but. It's a hectic old schedule. That's sort of, but it is. It's like listening to the soccer players, football players, depending on which side of the pond you are. You know, moaning about
Christmas schedules.
Moaning about how difficult it is to go and make a living ski racing or playing your sport. So, I don't feel that sorry for them.
Yeah, and I guess the sort of old guard would say, well, you know, in my day we were actually doing all four or five disciplines, and you guys are all kind of now specialists or doing, you know, speed or tech, and there's fewer and fewer, aren't there? Mm. There's fewer and fewer athletes that are doing everything across the board.
I think we've seen a bit of a resurgence of that. That probably leads us quite nicely on to thinking about sort of your thoughts on what to expect from the season. Obviously, your record points score for Odermatt last year, and Michaela Schifrin back to arguably her best, if not her very best. And so I think a lot of the other athletes have decided, look, if we want to take away points from these superstars, we're going to have to do more disciplines. I think if you look at Marco Schwarz as a prime example, for him to try and get anywhere near an overall, he's got to ski everything all of the time and pray that he can stay injury free.
Do you think is that the ultimate accolade? Is that how these athletes are looking at it? Do you think they're looking at discipline titles, or do you think really there's a lot of them saying, you know what, it's all about the overall? Because used to be.
Is that still the case? I think it must be, because I don't see why Marco Schwarz as an example, and Austria being, again, don't want to offend anybody, but arguably being the biggest nation in ski racing and the most passionate with their, you know, fans being very much ski racing focused. I think, you know, why would you as Marco Schwarz not go, right, well, I'm going to focus in on just GS or focus in on just slalom and win a globe. Yeah. You know, he's now doing Super G downhill, slalom and GS. You're limiting your chances to take one globe by...
I think they're also in Austria. No. I think they're also, you know, he's trying to live up to the very, very high standards of the last generation in Marcel Hirscher. And okay, well, you know, he could do everything. You know, we need a new star that can do everything. We've always gone for the overall. So maybe as a national team as well, the sort of, you know, looking at, well, who could have a chance of doing it in the overall. And maybe there's some, you know, I'm sure Marco Schwarz wants to be doing it. You know, he's not a child. They're not going to be
forcing him to do it. No.
Forcing him to do something he doesn't want to be, but maybe there is, from their point of view, okay, we want to take the direction of producing stars in the overall, because they've always had that.
Yeah, and he's obviously not half bad at all of those disciplines. Yeah. So maybe it's a case of picking up as much point, you know, just as much time and spotlight as.
It's tough, isn't maybe, it? But there's so many specialist guys now that it's.
We saw Kilder dabbling in. Yeah, he picked up. I think when his GS didn't go that well at the very start of last season, he took his foot off the gas a bit and then came back and did a couple more. And I think that shows, for Kilder, the biggest goal is an overall title, because why would he pull on the GS skis to pick up lower down? He's not looking for wins. Well, I'm sure he would love a win, obviously, but he's not yeah. going in there going, oh, I'm going to get a podium at GS. He's going, right, if I can get a top five, top six,
sneak some points,
I'm going to pick up a half decent haul. That's going to go towards my overall.
But that's what's so impressive about it, I think, is that because there are so many specialists. I mean, let's face it, there's definitely fewer guys that are going for the overall as a general trend. Yes. Than 20 years ago.
Yeah, because I think you've got these superstars that just make it so difficult.
Exactly. And so there's so many specialists doing, say, you know, just slalom or just GS or, let's say, just speed, that I think it's really impressive when someone that is doing all disciplines can come in and smash in a top 15 result.
Mm.
Because, you know, well, it's logical numbers, isn't it? If someone's able to train or dedicate 200 days to one discipline, and someone's got 200 days spread across three, the likelihood is that, you know, on the person doing 200 in one discipline is going to be better, at least at that discipline, than anyone else. So, you know, it's a highly complex skill, ski racing, in each of the disciplines, and you need to practice it. So it's of course, it's transferable skills, but it's very, very impressive when one of these guys that's going for the overall is able to just jump into a discipline he's not so familiar with and compete at it. So, yeah, interesting. Overall, I just think Odermatt was so brilliant last year, and I think he is just ridiculously talented. I think he'll still get it, but I think Kilder will be right with him. You know, I just think Odermatt, when he needs to, he'll just smash in a GS and get another 100 points.
Yeah, well,
and the ability of Kilder to do that is less. So who knows? Let's see what the strategy's been. But it might be that Kilder's gone, okay, well, we need to be boom, winning like clockwork in speed. I'd be really interested to hear more of the strategic ideas behind the training programs, not just the technical ideas, but for these guys that are going for these titles, the strategic ideas behind what they're doing, because there must be, you know, there must be discussions that go on.
Yeah, okay, the performance directors must be coming up, and you know, maybe it's the likes of sort of a Schifrin program where she is her own. Yeah, I know she skis with the rest of the girls, but she's very much her own prep, you know.
Yeah,
she's not falling in with a team. The team are falling in with
exactly
with a Schifrin program. So they do what she wants. But again, okay, maybe on the Swiss side or the Austrian side or the French side, or the, you know, it's a bit more of an overview from your performance director or you know, that makes these decisions about what's actually going to happen. But you're right with Odermatt. To remind you from last week, those of you that missed the pod, in there was 10 GSs and he won 7. He was second in one and he was third in one and he had one DNF.
It's incredible, isn't it?
And in Super G, he won 6 out of 8, had 1 second and 1 third. Yeah. So he was on the podium in every single Super G and he won 70% of the races he won in GS. So, and
9 podiums.
And yeah, so the guys... but luckily,
downhill,
I think...
Downhill stats?
That he got a couple of podiums, but he didn't get any victories. Kriechmeier and Kilder shared the spores, 6 to Kilder, 4 to Kriechmeier.
Okay.
So he's still, not quite.
Okay, so downhill.
But he's still a force for top fives and podiums, whereas that doesn't happen to Kilder in GS.
In GS, yeah, and that's the opposite, isn't it? So you wonder whether Kilder's gone, you know, it's like, do I... look at what I'm strong at and make my strength stronger, or do I address my weaknesses? And that's, you know, the coaches that they're working with these guys, they'll have a far better idea of what's the smarter route to take than I will. But yeah. I wonder whether Kilda's gone, okay, well, I need to win 9 out of 10 downhill races, yeah. Get me the best downhill training in the world all summer long.
Rely on his ace.
Yeah, and of course, we only see what people put on social media, or if you have a friend, a coaching friend that you can speak to and say, okay, what's the deal with this? What are these guys up to? But, you know, it's the close circle that really know what the strategic aims are. And obviously, they're not going to want to give that stuff away.
They're not going to tell us.
Yeah, and I don't think they should. It's interesting to debate it, but... yeah, you see a snapshot of, you know, a few videos dancing to ABBA and all the rest of it.
No,
you're not seeing the
I've already done that
strategic
one.
Discussions.
Not going back into TikTok videos and flipping all that mumbo jumbo. But I think we are on the men's side. We're lucky because it is a real ding dong battle between Kilda and Odermatt, and who knows with Bratton and Schwarz this season. Maybe there's a couple of flies in the ointment, and maybe it's not just going to be a two-horse race this season. And maybe, you know, it could easily be a four, because I think Bratton, you know, as he gets older, is going to do more, isn't he?
Him and McGrath, am I right? Yeah. Yeah. Last year, first Super G World Cup, boom, boom, both of them fast in there.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I saw that those guys are in New Zealand during the summer, so I presume they're not putting a big emphasis this year on speed. But you've got to think for the future. Okay, well, these guys can win slalom in GSs, and they're certainly very good in speed already, or at least in Super G. And you've got to be assuming that at some point they're gonna play that card and say, right, we've got a few discipline titles, let's go for an overall, because they're the future of the sport. And I assume, whilst Kilda is still right up there, they're going to want to train with him and benefit from his expertise as he did from Svindal and Jansrud. Yeah. So I wonder when that's going to happen. And obviously McGrath in this summer is coming back from injury. Again. So I presume for him, not this year, but who knows, maybe he'll do one. And with Bratton, I don't know. But again, you know, he's a free spirit, isn't he? So he's probably got his own ideas, and he'll do his own performance directing. So you'd have to ask someone that knows him better than I do.
But on the women's side, I think it's interesting to hear your opinion. It's going to be it's tough off last season's stats and the utter domination of the women's tour.
Amazing.
By Mikaela Shiffrin, winning 7 out of 10 GSs, 6 out of 11 slaloms. You know, you can't give... You know, take that many points in tech and not walk away with crazy.
So what did she do in the end? 14 wins. Did she have a Super G win as well?
Yes, one Super G win. No downhill wins last season.
14 wins. I mean, it's you know, it wasn't so long ago. Everyone was you know, people love to see the great fall as well.
The Olympic season and all that.
You know,
all that
around the Olympics, that went on and with there that. Was. A lot of chat about, you know, she lost it and everything else. And certainly it's, I love sporting dominance. It's certainly good to see someone come back in. And again, you only see what they want to show you on social media. But it certainly looks like she's relentless in her training. Yeah. One season finishes, prep for the next one begins. A quick holiday, a quick, you know, PR, promotion, sponsors. But it's actually, boom, 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 yeah, boom. I don't know how it's possible to fit in that much stuff.
Mm. With all the baggage that goes along with how, you know, the record-setting season, victories, all that sort of stuff, that whole media circus that follows Mikaela Shiffrin round and will undoubtedly, with the domination of last season, be even more hype. Yes, she's got the all-time record of World Cup wins, but now it's going to be a case of, is she going to get the 100 this year? When's the 100 going to come? And then it's going to be, she's going to be battling questions, and I can already hear her in the interviews going, I don't just put my skis on and win. You can't disrespect the rest of the women's field and all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, like you say, we love a sporting great, and when you are that good, she has to fit in so much stuff. But you're right, she is relentless with it. The only thing that I can say about that is, I'm sure that becomes a hell of a lot easier when you're as good and, you know, and successful. If you're not successful, it's a lot harder to gee yourself up, get back on the horse for yet another season. I think that becomes much more difficult when you've had a, you know, if you're a Vlahova coming into this summer, I bet you it's a lot harder for Vlahova.
But do you think, I mean, I think she'll take inspiration from, you know, someone will say in her team, in her close circle, well, look at Michaela's 21-22. Look at how Beijing ended. Yeah. Sorry, 2021. And look at how that happened. And, you know, she's managed to pull herself out of the biggest rut. And you can too. Yeah. And she's had immensely difficult periods, personally and professionally, Schifrin, and she always seems to bounce back. I think she's got a really good group of people in a close circle. I think she must do. And yeah, you're right. She talks about how, you know,
she's humble.
It isn't easy. And it's credit to her and testament to the way she also skis technically that she makes it look effortless.
Mm.
You know, when she skis down, especially, let's say, her traditionally favoured discipline of slalom, and using her as an example to coach young girls and young guys as well, and she's just, boom, upper body, so calm, so balanced. And you watch and you think, you know, the kids are looking and say, well, she's not even trying. Like, well, I assure you, she is trying to make it look that easy. She's working her ass off coming down there. And yeah, I think that's a huge credit to her. So last season was incredible. I don't know really who I think can touch her. I know what I was interested to see last season was Lara Goot. I thought she was strong again. That was cool to see.
She came back on form, but I just feel like she was
doing that. So what does she have number of wins last year? Three last season. Which, you know, when you look at the numbers from the rest, it's a lot of ones. Apart from in the speed, obviously, apart from Goggia. But it's a lot of people winning ones and twos. Yeah. And Lara Goot was probably, as an all-rounder, one of the best of the rest. So I'd like to see her challenge for the overall. I'm also really interested to see how Kulturi does. You know, she was great at World Juniors, then was injured. And so, you know, it's a lot of expectation on a set of young shoulders, isn't it?
But but she's we spoke about it last week. You know, she's 17.
Did you? Okay.
And that's when that's Schifrin's first victory, World Cup victory, exactly. Was at 17. So she has got a hell of a lot of pressure on her shoulders, you know, and from media, but also from what happens when you're that good, that young. Yeah. You've got yourself a Red Bull helmet, which we might not see this year, because again, with Fizz very much focusing on Silly. On the really, really important decisions that we want them to be focusing on.
I've just been to Red Bull in LA. Maybe I can help her out. I'm hooked up.
You're hooked up. You know a guy who knows a guy.
So I was barely allowed in the building. But.
no photos. But no, it would be... it is interesting. I'm not sure who's going to get close. I'd love to see it be a challenge for Schifrin.
Yeah,
because it wasn't a challenge this season. I mean, it was a challenge within herself.
Yeah, and she just ran away with it. Yeah. Once she had the momentum, she, you know, especially towards the end there, it was like, again. And I think, Vlova was, you know, on and off and out of sorts here and there. And her quality, obviously everyone knows her quality. But let's see as well, again, strategically, is she going to try and compete for the overall, or after last season, is she thinking, okay, let's go back to back to what I know, back to what I'm confident, build the confidence in slalom and GS, and then look at the speed again in the future.
I mean, which is what you have to, which you as a coach, I'm sure that, I mean, that's what I'd be saying to them, and I'm sure that's what you would be saying, is when your bread and butter isn't going well, you shouldn't be, you know, peppering everything. You should be going back to what made you as good as you were, and then get the confidence, and then move into a discipline that you're not as strong in.
Yeah, but... and we're talking strategically. There's so much more that goes into it, isn't there? And you know, changes of staff in the coaching staff, personal. Let's not say issues, but personal factors that are going on in people's lives behind the scenes, things you don't know about, and. So we see the end product and we make all sorts of assumptions based on, okay, well, they changed coach this year and their results aren't as good. But But there's loads of unknown factors. Yeah. You know, we don't, maybe there's a new serviceman or a different serviceman, or maybe there's been an injury that's not been talked about in the press. And there's, yeah, it's hard to draw clear conclusions over it. But I would suggest, okay, well, it's been a difficult one. Let's go back a step, do the things that we enjoy doing, do them well, get that right, and then we can increase again.
Push on again. Yeah, because otherwise, I don't know, you can't. It's so hard to find form once the season gets underway. And if another knock to a confidence, even if it's not your favourite distance, but if your race, anytime you pull a race bib on, you know, if your that performance doesn't go well, that'll knock you, irrespective of it. Oh, it doesn't matter. It's not my favourite discipline. That's not what they. That's not.
Yeah, and it's the opportunity cost, isn't it? So every time you go and follow a speed event, you know, so say Flo was, you know, she's really mainly looking at slalom and GS. The form's dipped a bit, and you think, oh, I could really do with just a couple of training runs or a couple more days to get myself back up to, you know, confident level. Then you're like, well, we're going for the overall, so I'm off to speed. Unless you maybe lose just a couple of key preparation training days before your World Cups. And that has a knock-on effect. And it's all fine and good when everything's going in a positive direction. You feel like Superman.
As a coach, though, do you put much weight in the fact that you could go off and go and race, maybe not a World Cup, or maybe a World Cup, but you could go off and race a Super G or a downhill with it not being your favourite discipline and maybe take the shackles off because all of a sudden you are racing in something where the expectation is very low. I mean, World Cup's slightly different because it's on TV, it's in the press. Maybe go and do a Europa Cup speed. Is that something you put any weight behind, or would you go, no, let's just dig our heels in and graft away back?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? And that's the part about getting to know your athletes and what helps them to tick and what... Okay, are they going to respond in a way of, well, let's go and let's forget that's not going well at the moment. You know, let's forget the technical disciplines. Let's go and do a speed event. And they're not feeling any pressure. So, yeah, they pull out a great result. That could happen. Or you just think, you know, I know what they need. I've worked with them since they're a kid. It always goes in this pattern.
Yeah.
You're using your experience and your knowledge to decide that. So I wouldn't say that there's... In that instance, so there's a right and a wrong.
I've seen both things happen. Yeah, you just hope the coach knows what's best for that individual athlete.
Exactly, and I know from my own skiing, no one else thought it. I thought I was an incredibly good slalom skier. I sometimes struggled to get some results in it, and then I'd get dragged across to a GS with, you know, kicking and screaming. And not really be bothered about doing anything in that day. And suddenly, like, oh, for God's sake, now I've made a result in GS. And the coaches are going to think, I quite like GS or want to do that. I'm quite good at GS.
Fire you into that.
And take me more towards that. But it was, at times, it was, and this is a, let's clarify to all the listeners, this was a very low level. But, you know, at times, when it's not the pressure on you, you kind of, yeah, you're like, okay, let's just go for this and see what happens, and you know, you surprise yourself every so often. So the coaches will know that. Again, the sponsors and the sort of perception comes into that. Say Vlova shoots off and does a Europa Cup speed race, you know, everyone suddenly knows she's there, and then you've gone down a level to just for confidence. But then if it goes, you know, you're risking, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're taking a risk. And, you know, it's like a boxer or a prize fighter. You think, well, you know, how good are they at the moment? Coaches know, managers know. Do we want to put them in a situation where they can get knocked out and lose? Or do we want to keep on picking their fights? And, you know, there's all sorts of sporting strategy. And I find that side of it all quite interesting. So I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of the internal coaches' meetings about what it is we're going to do and how we're going to achieve the goals for the season and goals for individual athletes. It's different for everyone.
Yeah, it's not easy. Not easy, but just imagine if you could. Imagine if somehow you could just sneak your way and listen to a bit of like the Schifrin chat about what they're focusing in on. Or
downhill to survive.
That's a guy.
Another conversation.
Yeah, another conversation at some other time. But no, it'd be cool, wouldn't it, if you could find that out? Because, but you'll never know. Like, no coach is ever going to, of these guys, is never going to tell you, because
it's intriguing, isn't it? You know, you speak to some older coaches, and they've gone to, you know, they've started doing private clubs, or they're away from one team for a while, and they're more than happy to then spill the beans on the sort of old days and bits and bobs, and yeah, that kind of stuff's brilliant. You hear about it years and years later. So in 10 years' time, we'll do a podcast on Schifrin's record-breaking season, and we'll know all the ins and outs of it.
I mean, it would be boring if we knew all the answers. Then we wouldn't be able to record this crap.
Nothing to debate.
But no, it's going to be a good season. Anything that stands out, shoots out, that you're particularly looking forward to, apart from Salback World Cup finals?
Well, I'd love to go to Palisades Tahoe, actually, because it looked like some great powder days there last year.
Yeah, powder World Cups, is that a thing that we're going to see more of?
You know, there's the AJ Guinness thing. Speaking of Palisades Tahoe, that was obviously a tricky day last year. But I'm interested to see, you know, because he came good at the end of the season. If he starts off at the same level, if he's right in there from the beginning again. I think he's reasonably pally from what I understand with the British guys. And,
oh yeah, he was at Dave's wedding, cutting some serious shapes on the dance floor.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
I think he's done quite a few training days or bits.
Yeah, I think he had a very nice time on a yacht with Billy Major. I think according to the Instagram, Billy didn't mention it when I saw him the other week, but. He told me he'd been training very, very hard, and I said, "It doesn't look like it."
said it wasn't mine.
Yeah, well.
So
you know, I think that is actually that's a very good point. I think that is very interesting, because you just hope that he can continue with the form, because when you burst on the scenes, especially somebody that's been around for such,
like Micah Richards, bursting onto the scene.
That's a very niche football reference. But no, that you know whether he can continue that, and I really, really hope he can. But you just hope that he doesn't do a Johannes Strolz and you know burst onto the scene and do some of the most amazing things, and then just new season, momentum's gone. You have to restart that momentum, to restart everything.
Yeah,
and it
disappears. Yeah, I sort of felt AJ needed. You know, you almost wanted, and I'm sure he felt this as well.
Don't stop.
Is there not another race or two we can reschedule?
Yeah, we need to find something.
You know, get another couple under my belt. So, you know, he's obviously proven his quality, and he's so exciting to watch, and he's been good. You know, he burst onto World Cup scene, or at least World Cup, let's say, you know,
well, the biggest podium
last season. But he's been incredibly good for years, and I don't know if he won World Juniors, but I think he was certainly. Second one, am I right in saying that? He was certainly podiumed at World Juniors before. So he's, you know, he's been a talent or someone to watch for a long, long time. And, you know, it's a great story, isn't it? So I'd love to see that continue. It's exciting. I also, you know, I saw, you know, with Brits, I saw Laurie ski down in New Zealand this summer, had a couple of great results. So his... bib number World Cup start list is going to be much, much better, much more conducive to jumping into the top 30, I hope. And I'm excited to see what he does. You know, I'm always pestering Tristan, I'm trying to find out who's skiing fast and whatever else, and he keeps his cars close to his chest.
You have to try and decipher the grunts, which grunt means what.
He sounds happy at the moment, so
there must be something wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I can only assume it's because they're all doing good stuff. So yeah, that's on the slalom side, interesting. In terms of events, what have we got back on there? We've got the sort of the Chamonix downhill and slalom.
Those ones are cool. I like to. You know, it's a great opportunity for the sport to grow in North America and try and get some more fans sort of really engaging in the sport. And what's better than going to one of the most famous ski resorts in glitz and glamour, certainly, that there is. So hopefully we can get a few more of the red, white and blue brigade interested in our sport. But you just can't get away from all the you know, we are now a couple of weeks away from the start of the season. Before you know it, on the men's side, you're going to be at Beaver Creek, in Valgard, Dane, Altabadir, Madonna, Bormio, Adelboden, Wengen, Kitzbühel, Schladming. You know, you've got those absolute rockets on the women's side, Sam Moritz, Killington, Levy again, Courchevel. You know, there's so many, Cortina, Kronplatz, these places where you just go, all of those good feelings that you get when you watch
there's amazing places, some amazing venues. Cortina, massive. I just love.
And obviously, with that being beautiful, Olympics sort of round the corner again, it's sort of people looking ahead towards 2026. So the Cortina events hold a little bit extra anyway, don't they? Because of that. So
yeah, that and obviously Bormio as well. Mont Tremblant, don't know much about at all. You know, they've got a couple of GSs there for the women early on. That seems...
Well, again, it's nice to see that, you know, back, with Killington on the calendar, that they're not just flying home and coming back to Europe, or flying home, but flying back across to Europe for the next round. They're going, right, well, we're there. Let's stick another one in. A shame that they couldn't have filled the gap that Lake Louise is left on the men's side. So you're going out to Beaver Creek, turning around and coming back to Val d'Isère. So I think especially with what we've already touched on with global warming and stuff like that, that it is nice to see them thinking about trying to do multiple events like they have later on in the men's with Wengen, with Aspen and Palisades Tahoe, that they can sort of double up for these when they're going and racking up some air miles. So no, it's all good.
Bansko on the men's side as well. We've not seen
that's a good one.
We've not seen that in recent years, have we? I mean, Manona had World Juniors.
That's where Marcel Mathis got his World Cup podium. So he's a big fan of the Bansko.
Is he getting his skis back out?
No, far too fat now. You're welcome, Marcel. So, as we are.
What do you think about going back to sort of, you know, I tend to talk a lot about, again, slalom, I'm completely slalom biased, but, you know, after Kristoffersen having the globe snatched, well, wasn't his for the taking, but snatched from him by Brathen in the last minute, what do you think he's been up to? What do you think his focus will be? Do you think he's looking at slalom and GS, or do you think he's... You know, do you think he's...
I think he's definitely going to be slalom and GSing. I think he's very realistic in what his chances of success are in this sport. And I think he realises that the overall, it isn't something that he's going to get in the mix with. I don't think it's for him to try and move up into another discipline. I think, therefore, you kind of write yourself off. So I do expect him to do both disciplines because he was very consistent in GS last season. Didn't pick up any victories, but he was certainly a force to contend with. And those Van Dier skis, again, another season under their belts, another set of, you know, another summer's worth of mileage with...
He makes them work, doesn't he?
Yeah, he really does. He really does. But I think... You know, I've had my ups and downs with my love of Henrik Kristoffersen with his attitude, but I think he's a great personality to have in the sport, and I would love to see him back at the top because he
seemed more determined than Stroppi last year.
Yeah, because in seasons gone by, and that's the thing that I find really difficult about him is the Strops.
Yeah,
and I think the Hirscher stuff.
He came across slightly different, I thought, last season.
Yeah, now you got he has the maturity, I think, to sort of take his hat off when he's beaten by a better skier. Whereas I think he just before it frustrated him, and I'm sure he still hates it, but he wasn't able to deal with it very well last season. So I think he's going to be more determined ever to keep the likes of Bratton and McGrath when he's there.
Well, we've talked about those two, but I mean, it's also, you know, Norwegians, they're just unreal, aren't they? And Stine Olsen.
Stine Olsen, yeah.
It's just a conveyor belt of talent.
He's only a year younger than Bratton.
Yeah.
So that gives you, you know, Bratton picked up victories 2 years, that GS Holden victory was, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I believe so.
So Stine Olsen... We talk about this youngster bursting on the scene, but I think actually until you remind yourself that he's only a year younger than Bratton, and Bratton just won a globe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that really means, you know, in theory, for him to be as good as Brighton, he's got to win a Globe this season.
Yeah, well, and I guess as soon as it's the familiarity, isn't it? Once you've seen Brighton around for 2-3 years, you're like, oh, okay, well, yeah, this guy must be 25. But, yeah. You know, and...
annoyingly talented.
Yeah, it's unreal, isn't it? And Steen Olsen obviously had the win once it was looked at again and again from Palisades Tahoe. That was his first win, wasn't it? I believe. So that was late on in the season. So he'll be coming into the new season super confident, riding high, you would think. And I love the way he skis. I actually went to watch Solden last year live, managed to sneak onto the slope courtesy of the Zampas, and watching him come down the steep there, was just, Jesus, this guy's on another level.
Yeah,
so I would, you know, if I was a betting man, which I'm not because it's, you know, it's wrong, then I would put some money on him because I think he's going to get better and better. And certainly, I don't know, certainly the way he skis aesthetically
is very beautiful.
Yeah, it's very nice to watch. And sometimes I watch, say, the likes of McGrath and I think, oh, that's not going to be as quick. It's a different style of skiing.
Yeah.
Super cool, but different style of skiing. And I think that's not going to be fast, and it is. So I wouldn't like to say, you know, I'm just biased towards Steen Olsen because it looks how I would, if I'm coaching someone, I'd like to go, right, watch that and do it. Please
just go, fix it, just do that. No, it is what's so great about him is that it's another body type that makes it work and is one of the best. So again, ski racing, I love that. It's one of the best things about ski racing.
One of the cool podiums.
You don't have to be a specific body type to win a World Cup.
Yeah, and we all think that you do, but then you watch. Palisades Tahoe? I think did we not have Noel and Popov on the same podium? I think they were standing next to each other. You're looking at that and thinking, "What? Well, how have you both just made that work?"
Mm.
You know, it's a really interesting concept.
Now, on to the most important part of any ski racing podcast. I would like your opinion. We had a couple of people write in. Please, if you've missed it or you haven't had a chance and you think you can offer something interesting.
You want me to do an agony aunt or something?
No, well, we're talking about ways how we try and reward people for picking not the favourites, basically. Because I haven't got the stats in front of me, or do I? The amount in terms of the podcast predictions league, I think Shiffrin was picked in like 75% of all slaloms. She was picked as people's winners, and therefore, you know, you're almost guaranteed. Well, you are pretty much based on the stats I just read out, points. But how do you think we can get around the fact that giving people a little bit more incentive to maybe not go for the obvious?
I guess you could do outside of the first group, so outside of the 1-7. So 1-7, you get single points for. 7-15 or 8-15, you get doubles, and 15-30, you could offer triple points.
That is a hell of a lot of work for Gareth. That is a hell of a Gareth. Will not be enjoying.
You need like a Peter Crouch podcast. You need Statman Dave. Well, if anyone out there knows Statman Dave from the Peter Crouch podcast, if you could get him involved.
Or if you, I mean, Gareth's very good at Excel, but if anybody can create us an app that will just like magically do it, anybody really good at coding that knows how to fix it, then. But no, I think I like what you're saying. But that kind of works, but it also kind of doesn't work because. The likes of Michaela Shiffrin is in the top. Is anybody from outside the top seven in a women's slalom going to win or podium?
Well,
so if the fall off from the depth doesn't go quite as deep on the women's side, does it? So
yeah, I think, feel like we're getting towards league fixing here. Trying to help people.
No, but do you know what I mean? Like, you could maybe do like the. I think we spoke about it just before we started recording. What about if the leader of that individual discipline, anybody apart from the leader, you get double points.
You could do that, or you could do that. You're not allowed to pick the same names two races in a row or 2 weeks in a row.
again, you're making much more work for Gareth. He's going to fight you. In fact, he knows where you live.
You asked me for ideas. I'm full of
rubbish ideas. But yeah, we still need to figure this out. Luckily, we've got until next Monday.
It's like a fantasy football league where you have to buy your team the start of the season, yeah. And you can only use people that are in your team.
Yeah, so basically you get 100 points to use and Michaela Schifrin is 99 points, which means that you cannot pick her for... You could pick her for a downhill. Exactly. And she won't be there.
Exactly. That might be even more work for Gareth.
But... Yeah, so I don't think you're... I think so far you are...
Right, all you've done here is...
You're an absolute striker.
All you've done here is...
You're an absolute striker.
I've got a really good idea. When we talk about it, I'm going to shut down all yours and present mine again.
Yeah, so do you want... have you got anything constructive to add?
I think your idea is really good, Ed. And yeah. We should just go with that.
I think that's a good idea. That's the type of guests I need. I don't need Marcel and Ben talking rubbish at me.
Yeah.
Chirping exactly. away. Marcel's, you know, he's always...
You just need
moaning.
Ego inflator, Mark.
Right. Anybody else got some bright ideas that I can shoot down? Please fire them over to the socials. Hit us up on Instagram. And we will think about it, but probably still go with the dictatorship that is the Ski Racing Podcast and go with what I think.
And if you've enjoyed this podcast, feel free to write in and request Mark telling more frequently.
Yeah, I'll cut that bit out. So, Mark, thank you very much.
No problem at all, Ed.
Been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Pleasure's all mine.
Until next time. Bye for now.
Good night.